Brochure, The Golden Future, Responses to Disciples' Questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 13.
Beloved Bhagwan, I feel a strong connection between death and meditation, assassination and the fear. When I sit with you, it is somehow safe to close my eyes and meditate. When I am alone, it is frightening. Please comment.
Jan Sazer. There is not only a strong connection between meditation and death, but they are almost the same thing. Just two ways of looking at the same experience. Death separates you from your body, from your mind, from all that is not you. But it separates you against your will. You are resisting. You don't want to be separated. You are not willing. You are not in a state of let go. Meditation also separates all that is not you from your being and reality. But the resistance is not there. That is the only difference. Instead of resistance, there is a tremendous willing, a longing, a passionate welcome. You want it. You desire it from the very depth of your heart. But the experience is the same. The separation between the false and the real. But because of your resistance in death, you become unconscious. You fall into a coma. You cling too much to death. You don't allow it to happen. You close all the doors, all the windows. Your lust for life is at the optimum, the very idea of dying frightens you from the very root. But death is a natural phenomenon. And absolutely necessary too. It has to happen. If the leaves don't become yellow and don't fall, the new leaves, the fresh and young, will not be coming. If one goes on living in the old body, he will not be moving into a better house, fresher, newer, with more possibilities of a new beginning. Perhaps he may not take the same route as he has taken in the past life and got lost into a desert. He may move into a new sky of consciousness. Each death is an end and a beginning. Don't pay too much attention to the end, because it is an end to an old a rotten, miserable life is time, and a great opportunity to begin a new life. Not to commit the old mistake, a beginning of an adventure. But because you cling to life and you don't want to leave it, and it has to happen by the very nature of things, you fall unconscious. Almost everyone, except those few people who have become enlightened, die unconscious. Hence, they don't know what death is. They don't know its new beginning, the new dawn. Meditation is your own exploration. You are searching to know exactly what constitutes you and what is false in you and what is real in you. It is a tremendous journey from the false to the real, from the mortal to the immortal, from the darkness to light. But when you come to the point of seeing the separation from the mind and the body, and yourself just as a witness, the experience is the same. You are not dying, but a man who has meditated will die joyfully because he knows there is no death. The death was in his clinging with life. You say, "Father, I feel a strong connection between death and meditation." There is. In the ancient scriptures of this land, even the master is defined as death, because his whole function, his whole work is to teach you meditation. In other words, he is teaching you to die without dying, to pass through the experience of death, surprised that you are still alive. Death was like a cloud that has passed. It has not even scratched you. Hence the fascination and the fear. The fascination is to know the mysterious experience everybody has to pass, has passed many times, but became unconscious. And the fear that perhaps death is only the end and not another beginning. It happened just in the beginning of this century. The king of Varanasi was to be operated. And the operation was major. But the king was very stubborn. And he won't take any kind of anesthesia. He said, you can do the operation, but I want to see it happen. I don't want to be unconscious. The doctors were puzzled. It is against medical practice. Such a major operation is going to be too painful. The man may die out of the pain. Surgery needs that you should go unconscious. Perhaps the science of surgery has learned the art of anesthesia. From the experience of death. Because death is the greatest surgery. It separates you with your body, with your mind, with your heart. And you have been remained identified with all this for 70 years, 80 years, they have become almost your real self. The separation is going to be very painful. And there is a limit to pain. Have you ever watched that there is no unbearable pain? The word unbearable pain exists only in language. All pain is bearable. The moment it becomes unbearable, you fall unconscious. Your unconsciousness is a way to bear it. If it was an ordinary man, the doctors would not have listened to him. But he was a king, and a very well-known king. And known all over the country as a great wise man. And he persuaded the surgeons that don't be worried. Nothing is going to happen to me. Just give me 5 minutes before you start your operation so that I can arrange myself into a meditative state. Once I'm in meditation, I'm already far away from the body. then you can cut my whole body into pieces. I will be only a witness, and a far away witness, as if it is happening to somebody else. The moment was very critical. The operation has to be done immediately. If it is not done immediately, it may cause death. And there were only two alternatives: either to operate it and the patient remains conscious, or not to operate and follow the old routine of science. But in that case, death is certain. In the first case, there is a chance. Perhaps this man can manage, and he is so certain finding no way to change him, they had to operate. That was the first operation done without anesthesia in a state of meditation. The king simply closed his eyes, became silent. Even the surgeons felt something changing around the king, the wife, the prisons. His face became relaxed like a small baby, just born. And after 5 minutes, they started the operation. The operation took 2 hours. And they were trembling with fear. In fact, they were not hoping that the king will survive. The shock is going to be too much. But when the operation was over, the king asked them, "Can I now open my eyes?" It was discussed all over the world in the medical field. As a very strange case. And the surgeons asked him what he did. He said, "I have not done anything." To meditate is my very life, moment to moment. I am living in silence. I ask those 5 minutes because you are going to do such a dangerous operation. I should become absolutely settled in my being with no wavering, and then you can do anything. Because you are not doing it to me. I am consciousness and you cannot operate on consciousness. You can operate only on the body. You say when I sit with you, it is somehow safe. There is really no difference whether you sit with me or you sit alone, but it is just a mind security. The idea that the master is present, there is no harm to take the jump. If something goes wrong, somebody is there to take care of it. But in meditation, nothing goes wrong ever. And without meditation, everything is going wrong. Nothing goes right without meditation. Your whole life is going wrong. You live only in hope, but your hopes are never fulfilled. Your life is a long, long tragedy. And the reason is your unawareness, your unmeditativeness, meditation looks like death, and the experience is exactly the same. But the attitude and the approach is different. And the difference is so vast that it can be said that meditation is life and death is just a dream. But this is the function of a mystery school, where many people are meditating, where a master is present. You feel safe. You are not alone. If something goes wrong, help will be available immediately. But nothing goes wrong. So meditate while you are sitting with me, and meditate in your aloneness. Meditation is the only absolute guarantee that nothing goes wrong with it. It only reveals your existence to yourself, how anything can go wrong. And you are not doing anything, you are really stopping doing everything. You are stopping thinking, feeling, doing. A full stop to all your actions. Only consciousness remains, because that is not your action. That is you. And once you have tasted your being, all fear disappears. And life becomes a totally new dimension. No more mundane, no more ordinary. For the first time you see the sacredness and the divineness. Not only of yourself, but all that exists. Everything becomes mysterious. And to live in this mystery is the only way to live blissfully. To live in this mystery is to live under blessings showering on you like rain. Each moment brings more and more deeper and profounder blessings to you. Not that you deserve them. But because life gives it out of its abundance, it is burdened, it shares it with whomsoever is receptive to it. But don't get the idea that meditation is death-like, because death has not good associations in your mind. That will prevent you experiencing consciousness. It is death-like. In fact, it is a real death. The ordinary death is not a real death, because you will be again joined with another structure, another body. The meditator dies in a great way. He never becomes again imprisoned in a body. An Italian missed a day at work, and the foreman wanted an explanation. "Where have you been?" he asked. "It was my wife. She gave birth to a wheelbarrow." If you can't do any better than that, said the foreman, I'm gonna have to fire you. I got it wrong, said the Italian. My wife, she's in a bed having a push chair. That's it, wise guy, shouted the foreman. You are fired. The Italian went home and asked his wife, "Hey, what was wrong?" "With you yesterday? I told you I had a miscarriage. I knew it was something with a wheelers on it." There are misunderstandings piled upon in you. Some misunderstandings can be tremendously harmful. Getting the association of meditation and death identified in your mind is one of the greatest harms that you can do to yourself. Although you are not wrong, but your associations of the meaning of death are such that they will prevent you from getting into meditation. That is one of the reasons I want to make death more and more associated with celebration rather than with mourning. More and more associated with a change, a new beginning, rather than just a full stop, an end. I want to change the association that will clear the way for meditation. And if you are feeling here with me, silent and meditative, and is still alive, more alive than ever, then there is no need to be afraid. Try it in different situations, and you will always find it a source of great healing, a source of great well-being, a source of great wisdom, a source of great insight into life and its mysteries.
Beloved Bhagwan, when someone like Nietzsche or Gertrude Stein died, a genius who would probably have become enlightened if they had met a master, what sort of consciousness do they carry into the next life? And what was it that in their previous lives allowed them to experience such a huge potential, such a great flowering, and such a great lack? Was it the idea of wanting to go their own way without a master?
Thank you. There are many things in your question. First, when you ask that someone like Nietzsche or Gertrude Stein dies, a genius who would probably have become enlightened if they had met a master, what part of consciousness do they carry into the next life? The first thing is to be understood that consciousness has nothing to do with genius. Everybody can be a Gautam Buddha. Everybody cannot be Michelangelo. Everybody cannot be a Friedrich Nietzsche. But everybody can be a Zarathustra. Because the spiritual realization is everybody's birthright. It is not a talent like painting or music or poetry or dancing. It is not a genius either. A genius has tremendous intelligence, but it is still of the mind. Enlightenment is not of the mind. It is not intellect. It is intelligence of a totally different order. So the first thing to remember that it is not people like Friedrich Nietzsche only who have missed the journey towards their own self, they were great intellectuals, geniuses unparalleled, but all that belongs to the mind. And to be a Gautam Buddha or a Lao Tzu or a Zarathustra, is to get out of the mind. To be in a state of mindlessness. It does not matter whether you had a big mind or a small mind. A mediocre mind or a genius. The question is that you should be out of the mind. Of The moment you are out of the mind, you are in yourself. So the strange thing is that the more a person is intellectual, farther he goes away from himself. His intellect takes him to far away stars. He is a genius, he may create great poetry. He may create great sculpture. But as far as you are concerned, you are not to be created. You are already there. The genius creates, the meditator discovers. So don't make a category of Nietzsche and Steen and Schweitzer. Separate from others. In the world of mind, they are far more richer than you. But in the world of no mind, they are as poor as you are. And that is the space which matters. Secondly, you ask what sort of consciousness do they carry into next life? They don't have any consciousness to carry into another life. They have a certain genius, a certain talent, a certain intelligence. They will carry that intelligence into their another life, but they don't have consciousness. Consciousness is an altogether different matter. It has nothing to do with creativity. It has nothing to do with inventiveness. It has nothing to do with science or art. It has something to do with tremendous silence, peace. It's centering. They don't have it. So the question of carrying a certain consciousness in the next life does not arise. They don't have in the first place. What they have they will carry in the next life. They will become greater geniuses. They will become better singers. They will become more talented in their field. But it has nothing to do with meditation or consciousness. They will remain as unconscious as you are, as anybody else is. It is like if you all fall asleep here, you will be dreaming. Somebody may have a very beautiful dream, very nice, very juicy. And somebody may have a nightmare. But both are dreams. And when they will wake up, they will know that the beautiful dream and the nightmare are not different. They both are dreams. They are non-existential mind projections. When an ordinary man meditates, he comes to the same space of blissfulness as when Nietzsche or Albert Einstein or Bertrand Russell will reach. That space of blissfulness will not be different, will not be richer for Bertrand Russell, because he is a great intellectual. Those values don't matter out of the mind. Out of the mind they are irrelevant. This is a great and good news, because it means a woodcutter, a fisherman can become Gautam Buddhas, an uneducated Jesus, an uneducated Kabir, which don't show any indication of genius, can still become enlightened because enlightenment is not a challenge, it is discovering your being. And the being of everyone is absolutely equal. That is the only place where communism exists, not in Soviet Union, not in China. The only place where communism exists is when somebody becomes a Gautam Buddha, a Zarathustra, a Lao Tzu. Suddenly, all distinctions, talents of the mind disappear. There is only pure sky where you cannot make any distinctions of higher and lower. And you are asking, what was it in their previous life that allowed them to exist? To experience such a huge potential. You are growing every moment. In whatever you are doing, a warrior will attain a certain quality of warriorness, a sharpness of the sword, and he will carry that quality in the next life. A mathematician will carry his mathematical intelligence to higher peaks into another life. That's why people are so different, so unequal, because in their past life everybody has been doing different things, accumulating different experiences, molding the mind in a certain way. Nothing is lost. Whatever you are doing will be with you like your shadow. It will follow you. And it will become bigger and bigger. If Nietzsche is a great philosopher, he must have been philosophizing in his past life perhaps many, many lives, because such a genius needs a long, long philosophical path. But the same is true about everybody. Everybody has a certain talent, developed or undeveloped. It depends on your decision, on your commitment. Once you are committed, you have accepted a responsibility to grow into a certain direction. Even whole races of people have developed in different directions, not only individuals. For example, the Sikhs in India are not different from Hindus. They are only 500-year-old following an enlightened man, Nanak. They became a different sect, but they are Hindus. And for these 500 years, a strange phenomena which has not happened anywhere in the world, you cannot find in a Jewish family, that one person is a Christian. You cannot find in a Mohammedan family that one person is a Hindu. But for 500 years, it has been a convention that the eldest son of the family in Punjab were Sikhs, predominate, should become a Sikh. He still remains in the family. His whole family is Hindu. His father is Hindu. His wife may be Hindu. He is a Sikh. And its strangeness is that just by being Sikh, the whole character of those Hindus have changed. Hindus have become cowards in the name name of non-violence they are boiling within with aggression, but non-violence is the ideal. Sikhs don't believe in non-violence, neither they do believe in violence. They believe in spontaneity. A certain situation may need violence, and a certain situation may need non-violence. You cannot make a principle of life. You have to remain open, available, and responsive to the moment. And there is no difference of blood. The differences are such that one can only laugh at them, but they have created a totally new race. The Sikh has to, any Hindu can become a Sikh, any Mohammedan can become a Sikh, because the change is very simple. You have to use long hair. You cannot cut your beard or mustache. You have to use a turban, and you have to keep in your turban a comb. You have to wear a steel ring, a bracelet, just to show that you are a Sikh, and you have to carry a sword. And you have always to wear an underwear. How these things have changed people is a miracle, because the Sikh is totally different from Hindus in his behavior. He is a warrior. He is not cowardly. He is more sincere, more simple, more of the heart. It happened, I was going to Manali. The mountainous path, and it has rained. And the driver of my limousine was a Sikh. he started becoming afraid. The road was very small, the limousine was very big. The road was slippery. There were water pools collected on the road. At a certain point where it looked very dangerous, a great river was flowing by, thousands of feet down, and just a small road. He stopped the car, went out and sat there, and he said, I cannot move anymore. It is simply going into death. I said, don't be worried. You just sit, I will drive. He said, that is even more dangerous. I cannot give you the key. I said, this is very strange, because we have been traveling the whole night, 12 hours, now we are in the middle. I tried to explain him that even going back, you will have to travel 12 miles, 12 hours again on the same dangerous road. Whether you go backwards or you go forwards, it is the same. He said, it is not the same, because the road that we have passed, we are still alive. I can manage, but ahead it seems to be simply coming suicide. I cannot go. At that very moment, the Inspector General of Punjab, who was coming to participate in the camp, came in his jeep, seeing me standing there and the limousine and the driver sitting there. He said, what is the matter? I said, it is good you have come in the right moment. This driver is not ready to move ahead. The Inspector General of Punjab was also a Sikh. He came close to the driver and told him, you are a Sikh. Have you forgotten this? Just get into the car. And strangely enough, he immediately got into the car. We moved. I asked him, what matters? I have been arguing with you. He said, it is not a question of argument. I am a Sikh. I am supposed not to be afraid. And I had forgotten it. Just a slight idea can change not only the individual, it can change the whole race. We have seen just now Adolf Hitler created Germany, a race of warriors, as nobody has done ever before. Just giving the idea that you are the purest Aryans, that you are born to rule all over the world. And once the idea got into their minds, he has almost conquered the world. For 5 years he went on conquering. People became so afraid that few countries simply gave way to him without fighting. What is the point to fight with those people? They were superhuman. These ideas also are carried from one life to another. In India there are Sudras, untouchables. For 5,000 years they have been condemned, oppressed, as nobody else in the whole world. I used to go to their functions and they will not let me sit with themselves. I will tell them that you are as human as anybody else, and in fact you are doing a service which is far more valuable than any prime minister or any president of any country. The country will be more peaceful without these presidents and prime ministers, but without you, the country cannot live. You are keeping the country clean. You are doing the dirtiest job. You should be respected for it. They will listen to me, but I could see that they are not ready to accept the idea that they are equal to other human beings. For 5,000 years, they had not revolted against such oppression, such humiliation. Just they go on carrying it from one life into another life, it becomes more and more ingrained. Panksha, you are asking, was it the idea of wanting to go their own way without a master? No. They had no idea of the great experience that happens between a master and a disciple. They have never consciously decided to go on their own way. In fact, in the West, masters have not existed. There had been saviors. They are not masters. They don't help you to become enlightened. They help you to remain unenlightened and just believe in them. They will save you. You are not to do anything. The West has known prophets, messengers of God, but the West has not known the Master. It has known mystics, but the mystics have remained silent in the West, seeing that they will not be understood. It is thousands of years atmosphere in the East that has made few people take courage and say things which cannot be said. It was the long heritage that allowed few mystics to become masters. The West has missed completely a whole dimension of life. The East has also missed many things. It has missed the scientific mind. It has missed the technological progress. It has remained poor. It has been invaded very easily by anybody. because its whole soul was devoted towards only one thing. Everything was irrelevant. Who rules the country does not matter. What matters whether you are enlightened or not. Whether you are rich or poor does not matter. What matters is whether you know yourself or not. A single pointed devotion and because of this East has a climate of its own. As you enter into the eastern climate, you suddenly feel a difference. The West is more logical, the East is more loving. The West is more of the mind, the East is more of the mindlessness of meditation. No punctia, they have not missed a master. The very idea was non-existent to them. Even today, millions of Western people are unaware of the fact of masters, disciples, meditations. It is only the younger generation, and that to a very small portion of it, which has entered into the eastern dimension and has been shocked that the real richness is not of the outside world. The real richness is of the inside. Ginsberg is dying. Call the priest. He says to his wife and tell him, I want to be converted into Catholic religion. But Matt, you are an Orthodox Jew. All your life, what are you talking about? You want to be converted? Ginsberg says, better one of them should die than one of us. People have lived as Jews, as Christians, as Mohammedans, but people have not lived as simply religious. In the East also, only very few people have lived in pure religiousness, but only those very few people have filled the whole East with a fragrance which seems to be eternal. God asked Moses to choose whatever promised land he wills. After weighing several factors, Moses settled on California. But Moses, according to legend, had a speech impediment, and he began to answer, "Ka, ka." Whereupon God said, "Canaan, that wasteland, well, okay, Mo, if you want it, you got it." Poor Moses, because of a speech impediment, got Canaan, which is now Israel, its old name is Canaan. But from the very beginning in the Western mind, the desire was for California. He could have asked about Kashmir. Where finally he came and died. He could have asked the land of Gautam Buddha. But the East has appeal only to those who are called by psychologists introverts, and the West has appeal for those who are known as extroverts. Going eastward means going inward. Going westward means going outward. And for thousands of years, authentic seekers had been coming to the East. They have found a certain magnetic pull. Where so many people have meditated, they have created a tremendous energy pool being in that atmosphere. Things become simpler. Because the whole atmosphere is supportive, is a nourishment. I have been around the world and I have seen how the West is absolutely unaware of the Eastern grace. How the Western man is unaware of himself. He is thinking of the farthest away star, but not about himself. The East has remained committed to a single goal. To be oneself and to know oneself. Because unless you know yourself and you are yourself, your life has gone. Away. It has not blossomed, it has not flowered, you have not fulfilled your destiny. Okay, Mani.
Yes, of course.